Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Imperial Knight by Eric Thompson, narrated by Paul Bamer. Part 1. Into Darkness. Chapter 1. A random psychic signal, faint but unmistakable, pierced the veil of Sister Catherine's evening meditation and shattered her serenity. An SOS beacon here? The void ships had not rescued any brethren in well over 10 years. When Dawn Hunter passed through the Yotai system 5 months earlier, headed for the Wyvern sector on a mission to recover technology that survived the Empire's collapse, she hadn't picked up anything. It was, without a doubt, newly activated. But the signal seemed more than slightly incoherent, in a manner Catherine couldn't quite explain. Perhaps the mind powering it didn't belong to a trained member of the Order. Wild talents weren't unusual. In fact, they were appearing more often than before, as if birthed by the apocalyptic end of humanity's first interstellar empire. But a wild talent in possession of a void beacon? Only sisters and those few friars with a strong enough talent carried the amulet-like brainwave amplifiers. She opened her eyes and glanced at the tiny cabin's display, where a countdown timer showed the minutes left until Dawn Hunter jumped to hyperspace on a course for Wormhole Yotai 4. The first of 6 wormhole transits, still separating them from home. 25 minutes. She reached out and touched the communicator pinned to her black, loose, single-piece garment. "Catherine to the captain?" A few seconds later, a male voice replied.
"Gusistan here, sister. What's up?"
"I'm receiving a void rescue beacon signal from Yotai."
Lieutenant Commander Alwyn Kusiston didn't immediately reply. When he spoke, it was to ask,
"Are you sure?"
"The signal is not particularly intelligible, which makes me believe someone probably found a beacon without knowing what it was, but it's real. And since none of the off-world habitats survived the Retribution Fleet's scouring, it can only originate from the planet."
"Are you telling me we should visit Yotai instead of jumping directly for Wormhole 4?
Catherine released her legs from the lotus position and stood in a fluid movement that belied her years. Like most sisters of the Void with a powerful talent, what the more mystical among them called an open third eye, she seemed ageless. The coppery red hair framing her round face remained untouched by gray, though the deepening laugh lines on either side of her snub nose and the crow's feet radiating from the corners of her green eyes marked the passage of time. Over 2 decades had passed since she first stepped aboard the former Imperial starship Vanquish at Captain Jonas Moraine's invitation after she and the other survivors of the Yotai Abbey massacre joined his crusade to save a spark of advanced civilization on a distant human colony.
"If you consider the risk acceptable..."
Catherine was Dawn Hunter's chaplain and counselor, making her the senior member of the Order aboard. She and 3 other sisters were auxiliaries holding temporary naval warrants and worked alongside a crew drawn from the Lioness Navy. As such, she could only recommend, not issue orders. Originally owned by the Order of the Void, which used them for commerce, transport, and during the Empire's collapse, rescue, Dawn Hunter and the rest of the Galactic Dawn Fleet now served as reconnaissance and salvage vessels in the Lioness Navy. The Republic's handful of irreplaceable warships rarely left the Lioness Wormhole Branch nowadays, since their sole mission was protecting the planet and its irreplaceable knowledge vault.
"Yotai hasn't been a risky proposition in over 20 years, sister,"
and we're in no big hurry. I'll ask navigation to update the plot. We should reach its hyperlimit in 12 to 14 hours. If you're still getting the signal once we come out of FTL, I'll see that we pinpoint its location and send a shuttle.
Thank you, Captain. The Almighty wouldn't place this across our path without reason. I'd rather investigate than spend the rest of my life wondering whether we left one of ours behind.
You and me both. Was there anything else?
No.
Crew system out.
Catherine embarked on her usual post-meditation yoga exercises, stretching muscles, loosening joints, and probing her body for signs of weakness or developing health problems. A challenge in her small cabin, but she used the lack of space as an inspiration for unorthodox movements. Besides, going through the daily routine helped calm a mind seeking plausible answers for the sudden appearance of a void beacon on Yotai, where there was none 5 months earlier. Dawn Seeker had rescued the last beacon holder on that benighted planet shortly before the Retribution fleet ended Grand Duke Custis's dreams of a second empire with a devastating orbital strike. If they found a member of the Order, or even a wild talent strong enough to activate the beacon, this voyage would end on a high note after an otherwise unremarkable cruise that had taken them within 4 wormhole transits of the former Imperial capital, Wyvern. They'd recovered some manufacturing machinery, though whether the engineers on Lioness could put it to use expanding the star system's industrial base was questionable. Almost a quarter century after the last Imperial strike groups ravaged rebellious planets, much of the advanced infrastructure in star systems beyond the surviving core around Wyvern had crumbled or simply vanished. Lioness wasn't the only world with starships on the hunt for salvage. However, it was probably the only one intent on building an industrial base advanced enough to support 36th-century technology. Catherine was working through the last exercise of her routine when her cabin door chimed.
"You may enter,"
she said without interrupting her motions. The door slid aside to reveal a young woman clad in the same type of loose, black, one-piece garment as Catherine. In her early 30s, with bobbed blonde hair, elfin features, and intense blue eyes, Sister Amelia was a graduate of the Abbey's training program on her first void ship cruise. She politely bowed her head without crossing the threshold, in deference to her superior's tiny personal space.
"I felt a strange sensation moments ago, Sister. It reminded me of the Order's rescue beacon we were taught to identify, but also seemed quite different."
"Well done, Amelia.
Yes, that was a beacon. Faint, rather incoherent, but unmistakable. Did Corey and Mylene pick it up?"
Catherine finished the movements, joined her hands in front of her face, and bowed to end the exercise period.
"No, Sister."
Her answer didn't surprise Catherine. Amelia was one of the stronger talents and trained by Sister Marta, who opened her third eye, while her two cabin mates were older, with less sensitivity, though she couldn't fault their abilities as healers. At this distance, the beacon wouldn't register with them.
"Captain Kusiston is taking the ship to Yotai, so we may investigate and perhaps save one of ours, trained or not. Why did we not sense the signal when we came through on our way out?"
"A good question.
We won't know until we meet the person presently holding the beacon. But there are many plausible answers. Give me examples, Amelia."
Though the young woman's formal training period ended well before Dawn Hunter left Lioness, Catherine never missed a chance to further her education. Amelia was a crew member for this voyage as part of her ongoing development before she chose a path among the many open to someone with her abilities.
"A ship carrying one of us, brethren or wild talent, arrived on Yotai in the last 5 months."
Catherine gave her an encouraging nod.
"Or
someone with the talent, either trained or wild, found a beacon that escaped the Yotai Abbey's destruction while scavenging through the ruins of Lena. It is unlikely any brethren survived both Admiral Zahar's purge and the Retribution fleet, only to stay in hiding for so long.
Though Amelia was born on Lyoness within weeks of Grand Duke Custis's rebellion against Empress Dendera, and this was her first venture into the wider galaxy, she'd been taught the Order's history, especially the bloody parts. She knew about Pendrick Zahar, now long dead, proscribing the Void and ordering the murder of every last sister and friar in the Coalsack sector. Catarin was among the few who escaped. They'd been heading for the Order's mother house on Lindisfarne aboard Dawn Trader when Captain Moraine saved them from pirates. Once Moraine convinced them their chances of reaching the distant planet via warring star systems was virtually nil, they'd joined his crusade.
Any more examples?
Amelia thought for a moment, then shook her head.
No, sister. Those cover the possibilities.
Very well. Please inform Corey and Mylene. When Dawn Hunter emerges at Yotai's hyperlimit tomorrow, and we get a better sense of the one transmitting, we will continue this conversation.
Yes, sister.
You may go. Shortly after the ship went FTL, Catarin made her way to the mess compartment for the evening meal. Although Dawn Hunter was a naval vessel, rather than refit her to build separate messes for the officers, non-commissioned officers, and ratings, the Navy decided everyone would eat together. Considering the size of a Void ship's complement, it struck most as a sensible decision at the time. Now, over two decades later, no one questioned the arrangements, although many of those transferring from warship duty to one of the Void ships found the contrast in atmosphere a tad startling. As was her habit, Catarin sat with whoever was present after picking up a tray of food from the buffet. Tonight, it was the turn of Dawn Hunter's ordinary and able spacers from the Beta Watch, currently off duty. Those on the Alpha Watch would come in one by one, eat, and return to their posts while the Gamma Watch crew members were fast asleep in their bunks.
Hey, sister. We understand you picked up a signal from Yotai.
Able Spacer Barrand said by way of greeting as Catarin put down her tray and dropped into the single vacant chair surrounding that table.
It could be someone belonging to our order, Arrels.
She replied in a pleasant tone, smiling at him. Captain Kusiston is taking the ship past Yotai for a closer look-see. If I'm right, we might take on a passenger. Been a long time since any Void ship picked up a sister or friar, Ordinary Spacer Yera Karp said. It's strange you should hear a beacon now.
The Almighty moves in mysterious ways.
Barrand chuckled.
Don't we know it?
Catarin took a bite of the chicken curry, reconstituted after this long in space, and chewed on it while a pensive expression crossed her face. The crew members who recognized her moods by now steered the conversation in a different direction. She was grateful for their attempt at distracting her, but the nagging sense of strangeness she'd first felt about the beacon grew with each passing hour, and her night proved to be less than restful. The next morning, a subdued Catarin joined Captain Kusiston in Dawn Trader's bridge a few minutes before they were due to drop out of hyperspace and silently took a seat at the unoccupied console.
Sister?
Kusiston glanced at her over his shoulder.
I trust you well.
As always, Captain. But I confess to trepidation at finally discovering who was holding an Order of the Void rescue beacon in her hands after this long.
You and me both.
The first officer's voice over the public address system cut off her reply.
All hands prepare for transition to normal space in 1 minute.
A klaxon blaring three times followed the announcement 60 seconds later. Then, Catarin's innards tried to escape while the colors of the rainbow twisted into psychedelic shapes before her eyes. After a few heartbeats, the emergence nausea dissipated, and she heard Kusiston interrogate the sensor technician. But before her brain could interpret the petty officer's words, she picked up the signal again. This time, it was much stronger.
Almost too strong, considering they were still several hundred thousand kilometers from Yotai, and in a flash, she understood why the mind behind it seemed virtually incoherent.
"Captain, we must find whoever has that beacon," Catherine said in a gentle tone.
"Is it a sister of the void?"
"No. A wild talent, but not one who can become a sister."
Chapter 2.
"Well, well, well, look who finally stopped by for a visit." Lieutenant General, retired, Brigadier Descartes, the Lioness Defense Secretary, dropped into a chair across from Jonas Moraine. The latter, who'd been staring into a half-full beer mug, raised his seamed angular face and smiled at her.
"Emma's attending one of those endless academic cocktail parties I studiously avoid, and I figured it was time I showed my face in the only place where I'm not automatically fawned over by obsequious ass-kissers."
He made a hand gesture as if to indicate the main room of the Lannion base officers' mess.
"You're the first soul brave enough to approach me uninvited."
Descartes, a tall, fit, square-faced woman in her early 60s, with deep blue eyes and short, sandy hair, snorted.
"That's because I know you're only human, like the rest of us, and not a god come down from the heavens so he could save humanity. Why Emma remains active in academic circles years after resigning as education secretary is beyond me."
Moraine ran splayed fingers through his stiff, silver-tinged black hair, as he often did while thinking, then shrugged.
"I can't figure it out either. But Emma has enough energy for both of us and still terrifies the university's board of trustees and most of the deans, which helps keep their worst instincts in check. Are you staying for supper?"
She nodded.
"I'm meeting Adrian so we can discuss a few matters where the walls don't sprout ears the moment we look secretive."
"By the way, where are your bodyguards? Don't tell me you ditched them."
"That would be impossible, even for me."
Moraine nodded toward a taciturn, square-jawed man with short dark hair and a muscular build a few tables over.
"Warrant Officer Madden is taking one for the team. The others are next door in the sergeants and petty officers' mess, eating their evening meal. It's only because we're deep inside Lannion base that they're leaving me under Madden's sole protection. You know how those pathfinders can be."
"Good. Otherwise I'd be ordering Adrian to convene a court-martial for dereliction of duty."
Movement by the door caught her eyes, and there she is.
"How about you join us? We can always use the wisdom of Lioness's foremost statesman."
"I'd rather not intrude on a conversation between my defense secretary and the chief of the defense staff. I'm sure I can find a few old shipmates with whom to break bread."
"Nonsense, Jonas.
Adrian will insist. Having you among us informally is a genuine treat. Let's ask her."
A slender, olive-skinned woman, also in her early 60s, wearing a black Lioness Ground Forces uniform with the three stars of a lieutenant general on her collar, took a chair at Moraine's table. She studied him with watchful, dark eyes for a second.
"Glad you're in the mess enjoying life as a mere mortal for a change, sir."
Lieutenant General Adrian Barca possessed an almost hypnotic, low-pitched, husky voice.
"And what did you wish to ask me?"
"Jonas is avoiding one of Emma's cocktail parties, and decided he would hang out with the unwashed masses he once led instead of sitting alone in that mansion he calls home, waiting for one of us to beg for his wisdom, permission, or signature."
Barca chuckled.
"Some things never change. Brigand and I were planning on supper in the private lounge so we can discuss a few things where the bureaucrats won't overhear. Please join us. It's been too long since we last enjoyed each other's company in an informal setting."
"I don't want to impose myself. A good leader knows he shouldn't get involved when his people are working out novel ways of keeping him under control."
imposing yourself. Perish the thought, I insist.
In that case, I accept. But as I've asked you before, please call me Jonas. When I'm here, I'm nothing more than a long-retired veteran with a life membership in the Lannion Base Officers' Mess.
My apologies. Barker sounded anything but contrite. Force of habit. You were my military commander and president for too long.
One of the mess staff, a woman in a crisp white tunic and black trousers, approached their table. She nodded politely at each of them in turn.
Good evening and welcome. The private dining room is ready, General.
Thank you, Sarah. Could you please add a table setting and warn the kitchen? President Moraine will join us.
The latter gave Barker a sharp glance.
At once, General.
And a chair outside the door for his bodyguard.
After Sarah walked away, Descartes turned her eyes on the Republic's head of state and raised a restraining hand.
Don't get mad at Adri. The staff would be shocked if we called you Admiral Moraine or just Jonas. After all, you hold the highest office in this star system. Not that your casual attire reflects that exalted status.
A frown creased Moraine's forehead.
What do you mean, casual? This is one of my best business suits. I know better than visiting the mess while looking like a bag of hammers.
Descartes smirked at him.
Your suits look better with the accoutrements of office.
I can't always be a fashion plate like you, Madam Secretary.
Barker shook her head in mock despair before climbing to her feet.
Shall we?
Moraine drained his mug and nodded at Warrant Officer Madden, who stood with the energy of a compressed spring. Descartes noticed his loose, unbuttoned jacket sported a familiar bulge under the left arm.
I see Madden is carrying his sidearm even in the mess.
Excellent.
Are you looking for faults in the guard detail, Brigitte?
No, just making sure my old regiment is upholding its lofty standards.
As they headed for the corridor leading to the private rooms, Barker said,
Sarah can bring you a fresh pint of ale if you like, but I've ordered a bottle of the Deroux Grand Cru.
He grinned at her.
Forget the ale. Only a fool refuses that particular nectar.
And did you wish to visit the Knowledge Vault afterward? I'll be happy to make arrangements with the duty officer.
So I can gaze upon endless ranks of hermetically closed starship-grade alloy cabinets?
Moraine shrugged.
Thanks for the offer, but I'll pass. The vault's safekeeping is now your responsibility.
But it is your brainchild, Descartes pointed out.
The low buzz of 24 conversations died away the moment they left the main room and entered a softly lit passage paneled in pale wood and decorated with paintings depicting lioness landscapes. Barker led them into what was unofficially dubbed the Defense Chief's private lounge back when Moraine put up the twin stars of a rear admiral and became the first head of the newly independent Republic's military establishment. Neither the furniture nor the ambiance had changed since then. It remained a cozy rather than a luxurious space, albeit one without windows, since it was set deep inside the granite cliff that housed Lannion Base's primary facilities. Three settings were carefully laid out on one end of a dark, gleaming wooden table capable of accommodating 20 guests with ease. Wine glasses sat beside each, while a dark green bottle held pride of place in the center of the small grouping. Barker indicated the head of the table where the chief of the defense staff usually presided over private functions.
Would you like to sit in your old chair?
I'd rather you did. That seat is for the admiral or general in command, not the president. I'm merely a last-minute guest.
Barker and Descartes exchanged glances. At the latter's silent urging, Barker inclined her head.
As you wish.
Once they were seated, Barker reached out to pick up the wine bottle and served her guests before filling her glass. After placing the bottle back in its spot, she raised the glass and said,
"To your health."
"And yours,"
Moraine replied before taking a sip. He nodded approvingly after swirling the wine around his tongue and swallowing.
"Excellent vintage.
You keep a fine cellar.
I'm keeping faith with the examples you set for us when you were chief of the defense staff. Barca carefully placed her glass on the table. Ah, here's our first course.
After the server left, Barca said,
I'm meeting with Brigitte where I know we won't be overheard because of strange news reported by our intelligence people. I figured if Brigitte thought it might be something worrisome, she'd bend your ear, but now that I can tell you directly...
Moraine's eyes lit up with interest. He had created a security unit, initially at company strength, shortly after taking command of the Lioness Defense Force, to give himself eyes and ears across the settlement area, as well as a military police capability. Those eyes and ears mainly belonged to part-time soldiers, members of the Ground Forces reserve units, who lived and worked or studied within the civilian community. Over the years, Moraine and his successors had used the intelligence gathered by this eclectic group to head off many problems before they became political firestorms.
We're listening, Descartes said. Have you ever heard of a faction within the Order of the Void calling themselves the Lindisfarne Brethren?
No.
Moraine and Descartes shook their heads in unison.
Isn't Lindisfarne the Order's home world? The latter asked before taking a bite of her appetizer, smoked fish.
Moraine nodded.
Indeed. That's where Dawn Trader was heading when we saved them from those rogue frigates on our way here, remember?
Sure. It's on the other side of the Empire from Lioness. Or rather, the former Empire, right? I wonder whether the Order's mother house still stands.
Chances aren't particularly good if memory serves. It has several wormhole termini with connections to what were frontier star systems a generation ago.
Moraine speared a piece of fish with his fork. Descartes watched him enjoy the delicate flavors. They liked living dangerously.
They preferred living as far from Wyvern and the Imperial Throne as possible. This is delicious, Adri.
But you were saying?
Several of my reservists, university students, heard whispers of these Lindisfarne Brethren while interning at the Abbey and the outlying priories. Strangely enough, those whispers come mainly from friars and not sisters.
Did your spies find out what this new faction represents?
A grimace spread across Barca's face. Not directly, but my intelligence analysts examined the Order's activities over the last few years and think the Lindisfarne Brethren want Lioness to become the Void's new mother house.
So? Descartes asked. If the Lioness Abbey is the only one left, then it becomes the de facto mother house.
Perhaps. But there could be a wholly secular political component. Our records show the Order ran Lindisfarne as a colonial fief. The head of the Order acted as governor in all but name, while the planetary administration was, at least at the higher levels, entirely staffed with brethren, mostly friars.
Moraine cocked a skeptical eyebrow at Barca.
And you think this Lindisfarne Brethren faction wants control of Lioness?
Do you still see Sister Gwyneth from time to time? You two were co-conspirators back in the day.
Sure, she visits Em and me every few weeks for a day or two of rest and relaxation, away from the Abbey. We keep it quiet so the news nets don't pry.
Did she ever mention the Lindisfarne Brethren, or discuss her abbey proclaiming itself the Order's mother house?
No. We stay away from politics, both the secular and the theological kind, as much as possible. When I'm home, I'd rather talk of anything but those.
Barca took a sip of wine, ate a bite, then asked,
if this were merely a push to redesignate her abbey as Lindisfarne's replacement, don't you think she would have mentioned it?
Well, then there's the apparent secrecy. Again, if it were simply a matter of proclaiming Lioness as the home of the Order's mother house, why the whispering?
Adri could be on to something. Descartes pointed her fork at Barca. It's no secret many within the Order think they should be the guardians of the Knowledge Vault instead of the military. Control of the planet's administration would give them their wish.
Moraine let out an exasperated sigh.
I thought we solved that question long ago when I asked Friar... what's his name?
Sample complete. Ready to continue?